and welcome to another episode of Get Lit. On the show today, we speak with author Jarrett Mazza. Hey everybody, how's it going? Just popping in here to say that I say Jarrett's name two different ways in this interview, and I apologize. It's Mazza. I see two consonants together, and I go straight up like I think I'm Italian, which I'm not, or straight up Japanese. There's a little pause. It's not Mazza. It's Mazza. So forgive me, Jarrett. Thanks for correcting me before the show went to air so I could embarrass myself in front of everyone listening by admitting to my mistake. Just kidding. Things happen. Enjoy the show. You're listening to Get Lit. It's Jamie here, and we're in the studio with a local guy who I met. Man, I know I met you at Grit Lit, but I have no idea how many years ago. At least five, maybe more like 7 or 8 years ago, I think.
I would say 2015 sounds about right to
me. Yeah. Well, that's almost 10 years ago, so wow. Jarrett Mazza is here today to talk to us about, I've only read one, but there's like three out there. The Dawn of the Trade, the Doorman novel series. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much for having me, Jamie.
Yeah, well, it's cool, like, I get excited, like, as an old man, you know, to see someone, I'd say, like a young kid like yourself, although I know you're not that young, but someone who comes to events, is interested in writing, and then suddenly, boom, there's the books. You know what I mean? Like, that's just a really cool, encouraging thing to see. So let me give you the first-timer question. What in the world made you want to become a writer?
Well, I was 18. And I was greeted with the very big question that all 18-year-olds are greeted with, which is, what exactly do you want to do?
Yeah.
And what are you good at?
Yeah.
So I started off as an English teacher, which I still am today. I teach English and creative writing. And I started thinking more about writing as more than a hobby.
Yeah.
So I started off writing a lot of genre fiction, which I still write today. And it started to become clear to me, like, I might be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I might be able to be with people who take it seriously enough to care enough to support me. And I have a family who was very supportive. But it just started off with this simple idea is like, can I do this?
Mm-hmm.
And then it grew into, what do I have to do in order to get it done? And that's where the long journey began.
Where it began. Now, you're still teaching?
I still teach. Yep.
Yeah. Where do you teach?
So I teach at Bishop Ryan Catholic Secondary School.
Oh, okay, cool.
Which is
cool.
My alma mater. And I just recently actually got the creative writing course at that school. And when that happened, I was, you know, very, very excited.
Nice. My nephew just started the BR this year, so you may encounter him at some point.
Oh, yeah? I'm looking forward to it. Right? That's great. That's wonderful.
Very cool. Okay, so now, as I said, you've had an interest in this for a while, and you teach it, and I've seen you around. Tell me a little bit about the... I'm looking at the word dawn, and I almost said the word dawn. But with that, let's go with it. The dawn of these books. Clearly, you were interested in the world of doorman, in the world of, like, professional bouncing.
Correct.
Where did that come from?
Well, it's interesting because I wasn't... How it actually started was I was thinking about characters that I could include in an action thriller. And
right.
I went down the list and I said, well, you could always tell a story about an ex-military mercenary, which is forthcoming. I have a story about that character too.
Cool.
You could do a story about a cop. You could do a story about a detective, a PI. You could just go down this. And then I started thinking, what exactly do I want to talk about in these books? And what I really wanted to talk about was violence.
Yeah, the nature of it, right?
That's right. And the implications of violence and working a very violent job, which is why the first book is called Dawn of the Trade. So I started thinking about nightlife security and just security in general and the actual trade of bouncing, which seemed kind of interesting to me. This idea that you're, you know, in a very volatile environment, you're in a different environment with all these people, you have to make assessments, judgment calls, and bouncing was a territory that I don't think was as explored as others.
Not even to make a joke, but other than Roadhouse, can you think of a fictional property about bouncers? I can't.
There must be
one somewhere.
So,
but
I couldn't outside of maybe just like something that was being used, you know, temporarily in a film or book,
but
not really diving deeper. So you know, this seemed interesting to me, and I didn't want to tell a stereotypical story about bouncing. I wanted to follow the life of, you know, a former Marine, a disabled veteran, who had come home from war and had to rebuild his life and was dealing with things with PTSD. And then I started thinking about, well, you know, the world building aspect of this story could be very intriguing. You know, sort of this secret nightclub called the Conquistador, and these doormen and these, you know, all these different positions. And it did escalate from there. And then because my publisher wanted more than one book, I was like, well, let's explore this world and see how deep it goes.
Yeah. Who came first? Like, was it so you just kind of said, but more or less, was it the character? Like, once you had the idea, once you decided what type of character it was going to be, was it what became interesting enough right away for you to just continue down that path? Was it the world? Was it the character? Was there one of those things? Or was it a combination of everything?
That's a wonderful question. I would say that it started with the character. Mm-hmm. And then it became more about the world. Because I know that I write genre fiction. And I know that genre fiction kind of seems formulaic, or at least it can. It can be very formulaic. And I was like, well, I want to surprise people. I want them to think that they're reading a story that is about nightlife and nightlife security and about bouncing. But then I thought, well, maybe we could add a few surprises, a few twists, take them deeper into this world. Then, like, how deep does it go? And that's where we are now in exploring the series.
Can we talk about books 2 and 3
absolutely
without spoilers?
Absolutely.
So that's where I'm curious to know. Because let me back up a bit first. I'll just keep that in mind for later. So tell us a little bit about our main character. As you said, he's a disabled veteran living in New York City.
Bayside, Queens.
Bayside, Queens. Pretty Bayside, specific. Queens. Was there a reason for that?
I just thought, you know, working class Marine, not educated, gets recruited to work at this club where he's among the elite class, and he's learning about this new profession, and he just came back from war, and he's trying to apply some of the principles that he used in the Marines. But at the same time, he is recovering and he's trying to figure out his life. So, you know, just trying to explore that and learn about that. So he's working class, grew up in Bayside, Queens, and now he's working at this nightclub.
So here's a character that I won't say was easy to come up with, but he's your protagonist. So that in a way it's easy because you're going to be getting into that character the most. We're going to be experiencing it through his eyes, right? So now he enters this world of bouncers, and suddenly you've got all these other characters to come up with all at once. And Was that hard? Did you get into kind of like, it could get into like cliche territory. I don't think it does, but it could get into cliche territory. Like, Johnny, he was the smart mouth one. And Billy, he was the quiet one. You know what
I
mean?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think you did
archetypes.
That.
Archetypes. You wanted the archetypes.
Yeah. And I think you do use a certain archetype, but because this is a world we don't know, they don't come across as cliches, if that makes sense.
It does. So actually, the inspiration for the other characters primarily came from my experiences in the martial arts community, because I'm a student of Aikido, and I have been for, actually, when you talked about when we first met, that was like 2015, how long have I been doing other things for that long? And the martial arts question came up because I've been a student of Yoshinkan Aikido in Hamilton for since 2017.
Okay.
And, you know, that was my closest comparison, I suppose you could say, to being entered into a world that you don't completely understand. So I met a lot of different people at that dojo, and I'm still close with a lot of them today, and they each represent something different to me. Everybody kind of fills a different role, and I'm looking at people who have been a part of the art form for, you know, some of the 30 years, and I'm looking at people who have been in it for 10 and 5, and what's interesting, the comparison is very helpful in this regard, because they all have something different to offer about the martial art itself. Some people are, you know, have a very traditional approach to the martial art of Aikido. They've trained in Japan, and then there's some people who have trained only in Canada, but have gone across the country and met so many different people and different stories, and this is informing the way that they teach. When John goes to the club, you know, he's meeting a lot of people that have been working in the bouncing community for years, and they're all offering him something different, something. You know, he's interpreting them as, you know, occupying different spaces in the club. if that makes sense.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Right, so there's Addison, who's the cooler, who's John's father figure, and then, of course, there's Danik Slade, who's sort of the elite bouncer, the guy who gets his hands dirty the most. And then there's guys like Jamal, who just worked the door, and then there's, of course, Kaya, his love interest, who's a bartender, but all these characters just occupy very specific spaces. Now, moving on to how do these spaces conflict with each other, and how do these various points of view also conflict with each other. It's like, you know, people have different attitudes towards violence, right? And sometimes it's necessary, sometimes it isn't, sometimes you have to use words. But the overlying question in the Doorman universe is, like, about loyalty. Yeah. And that's the essential theme that I'm trying to target in the series.
And that becomes very clear through, and we won't get into exactly what happens, but the antagonist, who we'll talk about, and the way that it crosses over at the end, and you start to become uncertain about people's loyalties.
That's right.
Because you don't know them yet, neither does John Hayes, main character, right?
That's
right. So questions of loyalty come up.
That's right.
I can see how that's thematic through the book, for sure.
Yeah, and it grows. And also, I'm trying to ask, like, the primary question of, you know, like, institutions and their imperfections, and how, despite the fact that, you know, something isn't perfect or an institution is imperfect, when does it reach a certain point where it's corrupt. And looking at that in the Doorman universe, I'm not going to give too much away, but there is a bigger world that John only gets a glimpse into in the first book. You know, was he brought to this club by accident? Was it intentional?
Interesting.
You know, and these are the questions that I'd like to continue to answer as the series evolves.
I have book two. We talked earlier about, and I've said this on the show before, about possibly eventually retiring it. And one of the reasons is I don't get to read just stuff that I want to. I've got the second book sitting on my shelf, but I'm going to have to get through all of my interview reads before I get back to the second one.
I know, and you know, this is also a primary challenge that I've faced being a newer author, because this publisher wanted multiple books, and I was like, what? Well, promotion. What exactly am I promoting? I love the fact that there's more than one book, but it's because of the way that they want you to operate is essentially you have to produce a new story within a short duration of time, however short that is. So when I was contracted, they wanted to know the potential release dates of the other two books before the first one was even released.
Wow.
So I'm sort of giving people the first book, and then there's the second, and then there's the third, and then there's a possible other series, and then it's coming back to this one. And I feel like I'm asking just, like, way too much of people, because all I want them to do is just, like, you know, support me, but support me in your own way. You want to read the first book, great. If you don't like it, that's fine. I have something else for you to choose from. And I have an advantage that way, I suppose you could say.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm just... The challenge that I've been facing in this this year, so I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
When you were doing the research for this book, did you do any in-person research? Did you talk to people in the trade? Did you have to go to nightclubs at all?
Well, I've never been much of a clubbing guy, but I am a high school English teacher. I don't bounce per se, but I'm interested in So I was interested in, like, you know, sort of bouncing as a profession, but I was mostly interested in people who are involved in violence. So police and some of the people I take Aikido with also have been experienced in that area. And I remember asking them questions. I did reach out to a few people. But you know what I realized, Jamie? They don't really have a lot to say either, which I was shocked about. Because when I reached out to ex-military guys and when asking them about inspiration for like my next book series, well, they had a lot to say. People in the bouncing community generally didn't have as much to say as I thought they would. I guess they look at it mostly as, you know, kind of like words, which actually continues to come up in the Doorman series, the importance of communication and communication as a neutralizer of violence.
Right.
And that's primarily where they were coming from, you know, using words, not escalating a situation, learning how to de-escalate. And the thing is, Aikido, the principles of Aikido are passive. So the martial arts that I take, their philosophy is like, we don't attack. We use what we know merely to defend and neutralize, and then we wait. Just, you know, for either, you know, additional help, or we just wait until the opponent gives up. We're trained not to not to really fight back.
Yeah, and yeah, yeah. And that's kind of, I mean, not necessarily in the same manner, but in a lot of martial arts, especially Japanese martial arts, like my son did his second degree in karate. Yeah. And there are similar principles throughout, right? So
yeah, and that's how, and then to me, that's how you know whether it's an authentic martial art mm-hmm. or if it is a martial art that is sort of evolved out of like the MMA scene, which I have tremendous respect for, and obviously mixed martial arts is present in the book as well when John starts training at Danix's dojo to learn more about like how to be a better fighter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That does play a role, but it's the idea of like the non-violent approach to violent situations that I just find like really, really interesting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
as opposed to like the sort of militarized martial arts, like, and I don't know for sure, but I get the feeling that Russian Sistema is something
yes,
like that.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know?
And like, and there's a, like, you know, there's Krav Maga and there's Jiu-Jitsu. And like I said, like I tried to really sprinkle in a lot of these martial arts within the books as well,
mm-hmm.
Because I have tremendous respect for like all martial arts. And, but you know what? Now that we're on the martial arts topic, the authenticity of martial arts actually was very interesting because when I wrote the book, I was throwing in like terms that were only really like people who train in martial arts would
right.
understand.
Yes,
so
sure.
I was throwing like all these authentic you know Japanese terms, and you know I also am really a huge fan of judo, so I was throwing in a lot of judo stuff. And I mm-hmm. remember it came back to me, and they were like, "Bro, we can't do this.
It's
we
don't
like
pretty nobody inside
knows,
baseball.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. Nobody knows what like an you know like an Ikaijo is or a young Kaijo. Like nobody really understands what you're talking about." And I was like, "Okay, well, I could change that." But it was something was like very important to me in terms of like the authenticity and capturing the like the realism.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I mean, I was just thinking about that because like why do I read an action fiction? Because I want to learn something. I want to find out something I didn't know before. So. Or like, yeah, like I really like authenticity in action fiction, as mm-hmm. I'm sure you can understand.
I mean, having actual training in
right,
that
right.
is going to be very much, you know, important
right.
to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, absolutely. I didn't actually say a sentence there, but you knew
yeah,
where I was
yeah,
going.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, and so, but now that I've, so what I've learned is that I've, and this was something that took me a while to figure out as a writer, but like understanding your rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I've found like my rhythm and I understand like, because now I have books published, now I have a series out there and people are reading it, and I like to think that they're enjoying it. So now it's like, okay, well now I can find out where to maybe sprinkle this stuff in better as I go along.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would really like to continue to do that. Yeah, authentic martial arts and trying to elevate action fiction much as I can.
Yeah.
And you know, I think a lot about genre fiction, as I don't know if you do as well, but just like where we are in the literary scene. And I am a genre fiction writer primarily. This publisher specializes in pulp, so I've always been curious. It's like, okay, well, are there any other writers doing that, and where's my place mm-hmm. you know in this vast literary landscape? And I'm still trying to figure that out, like where
oh,
my
yeah.
work belongs.
And
yeah.
that can go on forever. Like yeah. I mean, I think you've read my stuff.
Love it.
And well, thank you. It's not genre. It's like, you know, whatever literary fiction. Roll my eyes as I say it, because it's kind of a meaningless term. But I mean, you can see that obviously I'm a big horror fiction fan.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's pretty yeah. visible in
Absolutely.
Both, right? And so yeah, I don't think about genre a lot, and I don't know if I'd want to write genre, but I'll tell you, if I was, it would immediately be horror fiction. Like last week I interviewed, and actually he'll be on the show. This always confuses mm-hmm. listeners, but we're here recording this on a Wednesday. I don't know when it's airing, but tomorrow in real time for me and Jared mm-hmm. here, I got Nick Cutter on the show.
Oh my goodness.
His new book, The Queen, is just outstanding, and it's full on genre. It gets a full Stephen King-y horror book, and it's amazing. So I just love that kind of stuff, and I can see what you mean about, you know, trying to elevate it in your own way, trying to just bring something new to it. It's like, if I can't bring one single new thing,
yep.
then I'm just doing it for fun.
And you know what? It's I'm so happy that you're... Two things. I'm so happy you're having Nick Cutter on the show.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Because Craig Davidson is my favorite writer.
He's fantastic.
And I've been a fan of his for
They're the same
years.
Guy, by the way, if
yeah,
you didn't listen.
Yeah, sorry. He writes under a pseudonym, Nick Cutter. But the reason why I say Craig Davidson is because Craig Davidson wrote a book called The Fighter.
Yeah.
Which I thought was just like unbelievably outstanding work. And it's about a boxer.
Yeah.
And the way that he's writing violence, the way that he writes violence is just, like, just absolutely incredible. But here's the thing. So Craig Davidson writes horror. He writes action fiction. Yep. But he's doing it in a way where he is really showing off, like, his prose ability. Like, mm-hmm. his descriptive power is, like, immense. And same thing with my friend Andrew F. Sullivan. And they collaborated on a book together.
They did. It's a great book, too.
And like, so you're reading that and you're like, this is horror. But, like, they don't hold back on their writing abilities.
That's
like,
right.
And what they can do. Like, that's not exclusive to the genre they're writing in. It's not like, you know, Andrew F. Sullivan wrote another book called The Marigold, and he's, you know, that's horror too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, okay, I'm writing horror now, I'm just going to stop doing what I know I can do.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what, like, so I was interested in that because when I wrote drafts of other novels, like, they did kind of read, and I was told this by my editor, they read too much, like, to quote them, like, literature.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. what's compelling for me is, like, that's my training.
Yeah.
Like, when I started to be a writer, I approached it, I think, with a great degree of humility. Like, I was like, okay, you know, just because I want to be a writer doesn't mean that I'm going to be one. Like, I wanted to get educated. Mm-hmm. So I went back to school, and I like to think I went about it in a way that was, like, sort of proved how seriously I take the craft.
You did in the MFA or something?
I did.
Like that? Yeah.
So, and my experiences with MFA in Canada was difficult for me because I was a genre writer, so mm-hmm. there wasn't a lot of places that were open to that.
Yeah.
And generally, MFA programs are not as open to that.
That's true.
Yeah, so, fortunately, I did find one, and I did go back to school, and I did want to learn about writing, but it was like, okay, well, I don't think you shouldn't shut down the power that, you know, great prose can have just because it's written in genre. So mm-hmm. my greatest influences would, like, I love Craig Davidson, but for like men's action adventure, like, I love Greg Rucka. I think he's mm-hmm. great. And I do like Lee Child as well. And, you know, recently I started reading more of Mark Rainey's books, and he does The Gray Man, and I'm mm-hmm. starting to notice that he's doing some of that stuff too. So, as far as, like, you know, how much more I can get in sync to this rhythm, I'm interested mm-hmm. to seeing, like, the descriptive power and seeing where my prose abilities takes me, because
yeah.
I don't just want to write action fiction.
Sure.
I want to write other things, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And Davidson was a great example of what you're talking about, because, I mean, I just read, in 2020, I read his short story collection, Cascade.
Yeah.
Again, then there's something that just showed off a bunch of different sides of his whole ability and personality, you know. And I can see using a pseudonym, maybe just because it, in people's minds, right. it simplifies things, right? A certain type of book is a Nick Cutter book.
Yes.
And that could be something you explore, too. You
maybe.
Never know, right?
Maybe.
Like,
So this publisher does have other imprints, and I remember asking them, because they just recently said that we'd like to publish horror under a new imprint. And I was like, please let me write a horror story. I would love to do one. I have so many ideas. And, you know, like I said, the writers that I'm such fans of, they write horror. And I just would really like to do it. And they were like, maybe.
Yeah.
They're like, you're not too far apart from the genre. I mean, but, this is multi-genre writing is something I would definitely like to explore.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we progress as writers and as we find our rhythm, we also find our readers, and, you know, learning how to stay loyal to them and, you know, being able to meet their demands also becomes something that, you know, you have to think
about.
Well,
that's a really interesting thing, because I think there is a lot of, I mean, it's a catch-22. You don't want to not try something new
mm-hmm.
because you feel like people won't want it from you.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, people become fans of you sometimes as a writer.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I do, you know, you don't want to let people down. I'm writing a new book that finally doesn't have, like, a little monster in it.
Nah.
And I'm like, geez, I don't know if people who read my stuff are going to like this. I figure I can get away with it because, again, here comes the eye roll again, literary fiction world, you can kind of do different things each time. But how do you do that in genre fiction, right? That's a real challenge. And this is, I mean, Stephen King wrote books under other names too for a little while. So
it's a bridge I'm interested in crossing.
Mm.
But, you know, like, my pursuits as writing have been very mercenary. And they always have been that way for me. because, like, I knew early on when I first started, like, writing, I did kind of want to do, like, I'm not going to roll my eyes, but I'm going to say literary fiction.
Yes.
Wanted to write that.
By the way, I'm not insulting it when I roll my eyes.
Absolutely. You know, I just, it's a wonderful genre. And in Canada, it's so respected. And there's so many, like, you know, great opportunities for literary fiction writers in Canada. And I think that's great. But I realized very early on that I probably wasn't going to have what it takes to write a literary fiction novel right now in my career.
Not yet.
Yeah, I did the stories I was telling, I didn't think like had any relevancy in the cultural zeitgeist whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I thought that they you know, just my experiences were not as needed in that genre. So I was thinking more about, okay, well, I really want to get published. Like, I would like to build a bibliography. So I started to just write for whoever was willing to publish me. And that's why, like, my short story bibliography is just, like, all over the place. There's romance, there's horror, there's fantasy, there's science fiction, and then, like, even every once in a while, there would have been a literary fiction story.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so just, like, I don't know. I think that, you know, you're supposed to write what you know, right? I mean, that's kind of the first thing you learn in writing.
Right.
You write about what you know and what you're good at. And, you know, you kind of follow that path and see where it takes you. But I remember Kevin Hardcastle was talking about this because I think that he wrote a book called In the Cage.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And it is very good. But it's like a gritty, dark, you know, he writes a lot like Hemingway. He's got really good prose. I really like him. But his mentality when talking to other writers was follow your own compass. And I thought that was actually really inspiring and instrumental.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And what he was basically saying is that eventually, whatever fictional counsel or ever what like is safeguarding these stories and is, you know, like kind of they're the ones who decide who could be respected.
Sure.
Eventually, I mean, if you just keep following your own compass, he used these words. He said like it can be bent, which I thought was really cool. Like he was basically saying that. You know, we really don't know what's going to be relevant in 10 years and what's going to be respected in 10 years.
It's true.
We're all just chasing posterity, really. And I thought that was really cool. And so we'll see.
Amazing. We are almost out of time here on Get Lit. Let's talk a little bit about where people can find your books. Now, Rough Edges is the presser or an imprint of?
It's an imprint of Wolfpack.
And they have put out three, coming on four.
Yeah, well, nothing's been greenlit about four.
Okay,
four
but you've is got like it in the works.
Four is like I'm gonna pitch it. I'm gonna see what happens. but so far, I've only been really contracted to do these three. But we'll see. I mean, they want more. I'll write more.
Remind us the titles again. The first one we've been talking about mostly, of course, is Dawn of the Trade.
Correct.
Because that's the one I've read. I don't like to ask too many questions about books I haven't read.
So we've got another one called Revenge of the Fallen Sons.
Yep.
And then we've got a third book called Overtaker Territory. And these books are available primarily on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
These are the way that this publisher works is they push a lot of volume for ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've gone out of my way to get them in stores, so I'm trying to get them into Indigo. There was one bookstore in Burlington, Different Drummer.
Yep, of
course. Yeah, they agreed. Ian. Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He's been so supportive over the years, and he's just a wonderful guy. And they agreed to carry them there. So, but you know what happened was, I didn't even know this, but like Indigo is doing like Christmas stuff, and they're pretty overwhelmed with that. And they said, we're not looking at anything until January. And I said, that's fine, no problem. But now you can buy them on Amazon.
Very cool. Yeah. And I didn't even get to talk about your antagonist or anything like I was going to because it was too easy to talk to you. So thank you for being easy to talk to.
I love it.
It was great.
To talk to you too.
Well, nice. Thanks, man. We're talking to Jarrett Matza, and the book is called Dawn of the Trade. It is part of the Doorman series of novels. So check them out on Amazon, as he said, or check out Different Drummer. And Jarrett, thanks for coming all the way down to McMaster to be on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks to Jarrett for being our guest today. Thanks to 93.3 CFMU for the studios, Afternoons in Stereo for the music, and to you for listening. My name's Jamie Tennant. You can reach me at getlitshow@gmail.com.